I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, everybody. Jeremy here. Just wanted to kind of chime in here for a real quick pre-episode message. You may or may not have heard, but me and the boys over here at Sick Boy Podcast have launched a Patreon campaign. What is Patreon? Well, it's kind of like an ongoing Kickstarter. You can actually head on over to www.patreon.com/sickboy. And that's where you'll find all of the information. You choose how much you want to contribute to the podcast. It's a monthly contribution, and your contribution goes towards keeping this podcast going and making it better, enabling us to do live shows, enabling us to spread our message further. We love doing the work that we're doing, and we think it's really important. But we're relying on you, the listener, to help us keep it going. So head on over there, see what it's all about. That's Patreon, patreon.com/sickboy. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. It was a real fun conversation. Jess Crawford, who we sat down with, it was such a silly convo, mostly because Taylor and I just kept, or maybe me, Taylor and me kept just bringing things off the rails. But thank the Lord for Brian, little Brian Stever, for keeping us on track. Hope you enjoy it. We love each and every one of you. And and to those who've already supported us over on Patreon, thank you so much. You guys are the best. Okay, enjoy. Love y'all. Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Jess Crawford. She has panic disorders and social anxiety. Let's talk about it.
Gonna comment on this.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's such a phallic thing. It's like, yeah, just put it right in
just right.
Do you guys have your own mics, or do you just like mix and match?
We mix and match.
Fucking mix and match.
You don't have to, we should put our names in your mouth.
No, yeah.
You can just perfect. You just need to be close to it.
We wash these regularly. No, your mouth doesn't have to touch it, but
and they're not dirty.
Just be close.
And usually it's only sick people that use them anyway.
How about that? Back in Toronto.
We're sitting down with our third guest today.
Our brand new friend, Jenny.
That's right.
How's it going?
It's Jess.
Jess. Man, fuck.
Did you
see guys?
I was when you said that, when you said Jenny, I was like,
yeah. Brian was going, oh, I thought it was Jess.
God damn it. Were you fucking with me or did you just make a mistake? I don't know.
No, that was a legit mistake. I wasn't joking. Sorry, Jess.
No worries there, Chris.
Yeah. Chris, Brad, and Tom.
Like I said, brand new friend. You know, those things are bound to happen.
We met last night while we were while we were out at Get Well, having a little shindig.
And actually, I think that's a good segue. So,
right.
Jess, you have, is it generalized anxiety? Or how would you describe it?
Yeah, well, definitely generalized, but I developed like panic disorder and social anxiety, so I was recently diagnosed with those two things.
So okay, so social anxiety is actually a diagnosed term, a diagnosable term.
Yeah, it's in the DSM.
Okay,
that lovely
sure.
Book.
Yeah, we've heard about the DSM with Azura, the episode we did on bulimia and anorexia.
So can you remind us what the DSM is before?
It's like the diagnostic statistics manual. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's essentially like anything mental
disease
health.
Disease Bible. Mental
disease.
The mental health Bible.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. I actually just learned they have a disorder for puns. Too many puns.
Get the fuck out of here. Really?
Yeah.
That's not a disorder. That's awesome.
In the DSM?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love puns, so.
Let's come back to that at some point.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about last night.
Yeah.
So you knew we were coming to town.
I did.
And we said, hey, we're planning a get together at Getwell, which is like one of our favorite hangout spots here in Toronto. And you were like, yeah, I'll come out. I'll come out and meet you guys and hang out for a bit. You came with your boyfriend.
Yep.
What was his name?
Evan.
Sorry, I thought it was Michael. you came with
close.
Your
boyfriend. Close.
You came out with Evan and you got there and I knew that I did know that anxiety, some sort of anxiety was your thing. But the first thing you said when you got there was something to the effect of like, yeah, this is kind of a big deal for me because I don't generally do this. Mm-hmm. And it was very packed especially at the bar. And I was like, oh, well, wow. Thanks for coming out. And then today, and I didn't have this conversation with you and your boyfriend, but Jeff was saying that you guys were talking about how he plays this very big, like, supportive role when you guys go out. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would say he's like a thermometer for my mental health.
I love that. That is a wicked analogy.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
How does that thermometer work?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess in the sense a thermometer tells you if your temperature is too high. And so Evan kind of works like if my anxiety is, like, too high, he'll call it. He'll be like, okay, you're at 75%. We have about 5-10 minutes before we should leave. And so, like, we kind of gauge it like that. It's been a lot of kind of time to get to that point, but it's been really helpful.
That's awesome teamwork. Yeah. Like, the communication level there must be pretty solid.
It is, yeah. It's pretty wicked.
That's really cool. From a caretaker's perspective, I feel like that... not that I'm a caretaker, but I feel like, you know, I feel like my wife would hear that and be like, oh, that's really, really neat. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you are out at when you're out somewhere and, you know, you're doing this kind of back and forth, gauging what percentage your anxiety is feeling like, is it continuously rising or like incrementally, or does it ever plateau and you go, oh, I could stay here until the night's end?
Yeah. I mean, it can go 0 to 100 real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Did it go zero to near 100 when I called you the wrong name back then?
No.
Did that? Okay, great. I feel really bad about that.
It went to like 1,000. Like, I was about ready.
She's like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Jer, what's your social anxiety level at right now?
It's pretty high. I'm really bad with names off the bat.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, no, but it's not. It really isn't. I think if you really put effort into it, it doesn't have to be.
I'm that way too because I'm looking at your face, like trying to like get like a really, really.
Glad it's my face.
I'm trying to get a mental
anxiety level going up.
I'm trying to get a mental imprint of what you look like, so I'll never forget your face.
Yeah, I'm so good with faces.
And when
dude.
You say your name, I'm just like, yeah.
Dude, it literally goes in one ear and comes out the other sometimes. Yeah, yeah. But when I'm at the studio, it's a completely different story. Anyway, whatever. Right. So I apologize for that. I am a little bit anxious about that.
That's okay.
So does it plateau?
Right.
Yeah. So I guess like I was at like 85 at a certain point when Evan and I were just kind of like playing the game
last night.
Things.
Yeah.
I'm really bad at those. And then
was it at 85 because of the arcade machines or your lack of ability to play Pac-Man, or was it the amount of bodies in the room?
It was, well, the screen was making me real nauseous. And so, Yeah.
What game were you playing? The Star Wars one?
The stupid one. They had to like shoot things and like stun them. I had no idea. It took me. I had to read the instructions.
I was playing one and it made me feel real drunk, and I was not drunk.
So at Getwell in the back, there's like 15 different arcade machines, and they're all free, and you can play all of them while you drink.
This episode isn't brought to you by Getwell, but it's definitely brought to you by Getwell. Thanks, anyway, Getwell. We love you.
Anyway, so you were at like 85 when you were playing one of those machines.
Yeah, I'm very. I focus probably too much on my physiological symptoms that I get. So I'm like nauseous, like most of the time. I had my earplugs in. I know I talked about talked to Jeff about those for a while. They're like custom fit.
You had earplugs in at the bar?
Yep.
Because fit. Of the like, as you're just sensitive to loud noise?
Yeah, I have really like hypersensitive like sensory stimulus.
Do you want us to turn your headphones down right now?
No, this is good.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Yeah, let us know.
No, thank you.
Can I tell you a quick earplug story?
No.
Okay. God.
Thank you well, for we'll not allowing me to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, I would love to
hear it. God damn it.
So I was at my friend's show at a bar one time, and we always put earplugs in to listen to music because it gets really loud.
Oh,
and,
I know the story.
And anyway, I didn't have any earplugs, and I just showed up there. It was like midnight, and I just got there right before the band went on. So I went into the bathroom, and I grabbed some toilet paper, paper towel, and stuck it in my ears. So I'm listening to the show. I didn't really know anybody there. I just turned up to watch the set. That was it. And I'm standing there, and I feel like the paper towel is a little bit tight in my ear. So I reach in, and I try to pull it out, and it's gone.
Brian, he knew everybody there. Just saying we were in Dartmouth. I was there. Well.
Yeah, right.
You had left. I didn't know anybody. Anyway.
Regardless.
I didn't know anybody who was in the same. I was just standing by myself, and it was gone. I couldn't find it. I couldn't pull it out. So
dude,
I started
panic.
To panic.
That is panic.
I started.
That's
panic.
Making
there's
me
something,
feel
it's
panicky.
A body invader. There's something in my body that I'm trying to get out.
Oof.
And anyway, Colin's band finishes playing, and I go right up on stage, and I grab I have my iPhone with me, and I have the flashlight on, and I hand it to him. I'm like, Colin, look at my ear, see if you can see the paper towel. I need to get it out, and I was kind of panicking, and he looks in, he's like, are you sure it's in there? And I'm like, oh yeah. I'm so sure it's in there. And he's like, I don't see it. So anyway, I went straight to the hospital and went into emergency. And luckily there was nobody there. So I was in and out within 30 minutes. They brought me in. They used a set of tweezers, pulled this piece of paper towel out of my head.
Oh my God.
And I went back to the bar and was there 45 minutes later having another beer.
Dude,
so,
those are the type of stories that make my wiener feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you just go like,
oh yeah,
it was
it
fucking scary. That. It was super scary.
I thought you were gonna end that with like, and then I woke up and it was all a dream, or like, or I was high on acid and it never really happened, or something like that. But no, that actually fucking happened.
Yeah, it did really happen. Anyway, so you were wearing your earplugs.
Anyway, yeah,
custom fit. I need custom fit earplugs.
Yeah,
tell another story about that.
Yeah, please. Are they wax or what are they? Like
I mean, like I have earwax, but
no. Like are they wax?
They're like clear plastic. They're like buried in my bag.
Okay,
but
cool.
I had a prescription.
Oh, prescription earplugs?
Yeah, my doctor prescribed.
Do they look like hearing
super
aids?
Cool.
No, I mean there's several different types.
Okay,
but like they're just they mold to my ear. They're clear. Like nobody ever knows I'm wearing them. Right. You guys didn't know.
No, I had no idea. Yeah, I had no idea.
They're not like neon green or anything, which
no, funny sucks. You should say that though. The mold that they did, really uncomfortable. They shove it like all the way into your brain.
Oh.
Was like bright green.
Oh, fuck.
After they pulled it, it was bright green when they pulled it out and your brain was on it.
Yeah.
So, like, oh,
so the earplugs, they help you kind of like tone down the levels of mm-hmm. hypersensitivity that you're feeling towards sound, obviously, in the bars. Do you wear them on outside of loud places?
Yeah, I won't wear them when I bike in Toronto because it's really dangerous.
Sure.
To bike. But yeah, like walking down the street, sometimes I have to wear them in class. Like it really depends on like how anxious.
It's like it's kind of like a, you know, the compression vests for dogs. Like
no.
like if you it's like there are these vests you can get for dogs during thunderstorms or. Uh-huh. Or things like that, like legit. And it's just a vest that hugs them a bit.
So cute.
And it keeps them really calm. I know, it's the cutest thing in the world. But your earplugs, I feel like they're kind of like a little...
Yeah.
Like a comfort.
A variation of that, like a comfort.
Yeah. If I don't have them with me, it rises
yeah,
my
absolutely.
Anxiety.
So last night, how were you doing? You got there, you were feeling a little bit anxious.
Oh, I was anxious all day.
All day. Okay. Were you able to have fun while you were
yeah,
there?
Yeah. It was okay. Nice to like, I mean, we're only there for like an hour, but mm-hmm. we kind of set the goals. You have to dial back your goals instead of like going out for the night. It's like, okay, you're going to get there. You're going to even be like 2 minutes and then you can go.
Mm.
And so Evan kept telling me that and that was really helpful.
Cool.
And there's like no standard that you have
right,
to hold up to.
You're basically like, okay, we just got to walk in the door, be there, say hi, and then everything else is a bonus.
Yeah.
So what are you anxious about? Is it interacting with people, or is it just the atmosphere, the amount of people that are there?
I haven't quite figured it out. That's a tough one.
Well, sure, yeah. Let's go back. What's your story? What's the how old are you?
I am 42.
Jesus, dude, you look a lot younger. You look 80.
When you said that, I was like, fuck off.
Dude, there's no way.
No, I'm 22.
So, okay, cool. So when did this start to present?
Yeah. So I went to Western when I was 17, 18. And I eventually, throughout the first year, developed depression, and like my friends took me into Emerge because I told them that I was gonna die by suicide and things like that. And then
did that come out of nowhere? Was that very
no
sudden?
It was like a few months in the building. I would like miss class, I would skip field hockey, and like
that's kind of like sudden. I mean, in terms of our experience with talking with people who have dealt with depression, and
I guess
it
seems
it's like a kind of a quick onset.
Was it because of like the change in lifestyle from living at home and then going to university?
Yeah, I lived in res, really loud. I mean, it's still, I think my brain's like protecting me a little bit. I don't know how to kind of make myself of that, but I know I wasn't sleeping. I like hallucinated one time.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Without taking any drugs.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That is straight up. Unless you call like Fruit Loops.
Yeah. Well,
there's a lot of sugar.
There's a fuckload of sugar in it.
It's
okay. So depression started to kind of sink in, and then from there, where did you go? What happened?
Tried a lot of different medications. Mm-hmm. A lot being like 2 to 3. Really frustrating, time consuming process.
Because it's more or less like trial and error, right?
Oh my goodness, yeah. But you have to try it for like a month, and then you kind of wean off, and then you have to wean on something else if it's not working. And
did you have anything that kind of went wrong with the first two?
Yeah, the first one I was given because I wasn't sleeping, and it like just made me so lethargic I could not move.
Right,
it was
gross.
That
sounds like too much. Really depressing.
Yeah,
yeah.
We've
extra depressed.
We've come back. In any episode that started to deal with any episode we've talked about mental health, mental illness, this idea of trial and error medication is always something that like really intrigues us of that world, that realm, because it's just no matter how often I've heard it, I'm always going, wow, it's so fascinating that's. Just because of the contrast in physical illness, where you go, you take a test, and they go, you have this, and this is the medication for that. Here you are. I mean, there's and not
generally,
that's
generally
not always the case, but more often
generally
than
speaking,
not,
yeah.
And in the case of mental health, it's okay. Well, you have this, so here you go.
Let's do some experimenting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let's test it out.
Which I mean, you know, for the patient. Actually, I don't like to use the word patient anymore since we talked to John Granton.
Mm-hmm.
For the people that are taking these medications, like that's such a heavy process.
Yeah.
And such a heavy, I mean, you got to go through obviously clearly a bunch of shit before you find out what's going to work.
Yeah.
So at what point did it start to transition from depression into like, was there a spillover? It was like, oh, now it's starting to kind of look more like anxiety.
It was pretty abrupt. So I was originally diagnosed with depression and generalized anxiety.
Okay.
And that kind of went on and in remission for like a couple of years. And then, so I took a year and a half at Western. And when I started, I did 2 years at George Brown and then 2 years at Ryerson for the collaborative nursing.
Ryerson, what's up? I went to Ryerson.
Sweet.
Yep.
Correction, I still have one more year left at Harrison.
So does Jeremy. Hey.
Yeah, I actually do. I never finished my last year. Let's do it together. We can hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Oh, yeah, right? Anyway.
yeah, so I did a lot of like advocacy during my second year at George Brown. And then when I lost when I kind of had to move on with those things and kind of, like, I was president of a few things, and I had to kind of give those duties to somebody else. I lost a lot of the things that I was doing, and that's when my anxiety just went through the roof. I felt like I wasn't accomplishing anything, and then that whole summer, it built.
So a change in routine.
Yeah.
Or lifestyle kind of
satisfaction, maybe. Sure. I'm not sure.
Wait, yeah. So you were president of a few things, like clubs or inter school
glee club, obviously. That, I mean, that's obviously.
That's right.
And what else?
Like it. So, but it
marble
it,
club.
Yeah.
it obviously it requires social skills, I guess. To be in charge of something like that. So, how did that shift towards? Did you only kind of develop this social anxiety after that? Like, were you previously a fairly social, outgoing person?
High school, I was not. And then university, you get a new crowd and you just are. And then I guess the new change going from George Brown to Ryerson, it really kind of threw me under the bus because like everybody has all their little cliques and everything. And
was it kind of like you were building up your confidence and feeling confident with your kind of niche, I don't know, friendship circle and organization circle at George Brown. And then all of a sudden all of that's pulled out from under you and you need to almost like start from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate.
And then is that where you really kind of started to feel like, okay, something's not right?
Yeah, like it's only recently. So I even moved home. It's only recently I couldn't make my own food. I couldn't think about making my own food. Like my family and Evan would have to just come up with something and kind of play a guessing game at what I wanted to eat because it would just be so nauseous. And I don't know where that relates to the social anxiety, but it just, I couldn't do it.
It was actually, it was presenting itself like physically.
Super
like
physically.
Nausea.
Yeah. I was diagnosed in January finally with irritable bowel syndrome as well.
What else do you have? You're just like pulling all the tricks.
I said no shit. I didn't mean that. As a pun. I don't have the pun.
Can we come back to the pun thing? What is that? Is that do you know much about it?
No, my friend, because I make puns. Was like, yo, somebody who's generally, the way I understood it is generally sociopaths or have this trait. So they.
Are you fuck, really?
I don't know.
We're talking to a psychiatrist tonight. We should ask him about this.
Funny.
I mean,
that is funny.
I could be totally having a wrong source.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Take it at face value.
Yeah.
And assume it's truth.
I'm not saying like if you make a pun, I'm pretty good at puns. I'm not a sociopath.
When you say like a sociopath, usually has that trait of wanting to like make puns. I think of like a killer like chasing someone down. He's like, you're running out of time. And as he's like going to kill, like, is it something like that? I don't know, maybe not.
Brian is really bad puns. I think Brian's a sociopath.
I really like that one though, and I'm not a huge pun fan.
Well, the key trait here is if you are okay with other people making jokes, then you're not a sociopath. Sociopaths apparently want the attention from these jokes.
Great. Well, we make jokes all the time, and I think you think I'm funny, and I think you're funny, and I mean, I don't think Brian's funny, but I think he thinks I am.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, it all evens out.
Yeah. On the topic of you not being able to eat, I'm sorry, I'm referencing, like, every time we talk about mental health, I draw on all the experiences that we've had talking about it, and because I've learned a shitload from doing this show and talking mental health, that let's say for anxiety or depression, I don't have anxiety or depression, but I've experienced being depressed. I've experienced being anxious, although I don't have it chronically. Mm-hmm. And when I relate to the fact that when I've felt anxiety, that presents physically as nausea and not feeling like food, coffee, like everything that I usually am in love with is like, ugh, I fucking don't even want to think about that. It's disgusting. And like, so when that's happening with you, like regularly over a period of time, how is that affecting your weight or your day functioning?
Yeah. My weight is pretty stable. I just would eat crappier, feel crappier, then not want to work out. And it'd be like a cyclical thing. So my anxiety would bring that on. I'd have those physiological symptoms and then be more anxious. And then I would feel like depressed because I'd be like, well, I'm not doing anything, but I can't eat.
It's like, just a cycle, like a vicious kind of downward spiral. Yeah.
And when I say I can't eat, it wasn't that I wasn't eating. Mm-hmm. It's just that I wasn't eating properly. So I was still
So then you felt like you had to go to the doctor at this point, or were you going to see the doctor already?
I averaged 3 doctors a week for about 4
Holy
months.
Holy shit, really?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, some of them were for counseling. I was trying to change my meds with my doctor. And some of them were for IBS, and then I had...
Oh, so you mean you're seeing multiple doctors for different things, not trying to find the right doctor?
Right. That's a whole different story as well. But
sure.
Yeah.
And then at this point, like how do they determine social anxiety versus generalized anxiety?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think they just like you have, because I went to
traits,
CAMH.
Right? I guess.
Because like, I want to know, like, I'm trying to understand, like, how they're like, okay, well, you have this social anxiety, and one of the things that we can do for you is give you earplugs.
Yeah. That's not how it went.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to understand, like, how does that work?
So I got the earplugs because I was wearing, like, the crappy one. To me, they're crappy.
You weren't sticking paper towel in your ears.
Well, no.
Okay. Not that crappy. But the ones you buy at, like, you know, whatever, the drugstore.
Yeah,
like, little,
I even got a bunch for Christmas. Yeah. Great gift.
Nice, nice.
Stocking stuffers.
Yeah. Santa stuffs those. And so I was telling my doctor, I was like, listen, like, I hear so much. It makes me so uncomfortable. And I have to, like, I was commuting for, like, an hour and a half on the GO train. Super loud, lots of people. Terrible, terrible situation for somebody with anxiety and social anxiety. And then so I went to CAMH, which is the Center for Mental Health and Addiction. Mm-hmm. And the psychiatrist that I saw there, she, like, I filled out this full sheet, and she's like, okay, so because you checked off a few of these things, like, I don't like being in groups of people, I'm totally fine here. Then she's like, okay, you have, like, social anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's makes it, sense. Yeah, yeah. There's these traits to what you know, what make you feel a certain way, and then that kind of that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, generalized anxiety. It's like anything and everything can make me anxious, but social anxiety, it's like people or, like, you know, overstimuli of being out
right.
and around. You know, I get that. Yeah.
Do you? This might be a silly question.
No such thing.
Well,
rip it off.
Don't,
go for it.
Don't fucking test us.
It's not stupid. I'm making like an assumption in my head, I guess, and I want it to be validated or struck down.
Just ask the question.
So if you're dealing with social anxiety, is your personal space the absolute safe haven? Do you maximize the feng shui of that that space, like, make it feel fucking awesome?
You mean like my room?
Like, I don't know, whatever your apartment, your room, whatever.
I thought you were talking about like your personal
bubble.
I mean the way you make your home feel. If the outside world is like making you feel like, ugh, is your personal space, your apartment, your room, whatever, your
are you asking if she's a neat freak? Are you a neat freak?
Okay. I would
See,
say
stupid
yes.
Stupid question.
Told you. No, dude. No, that was a stupid question.
I go home and I throw things, literally, and Evan he hates it so much. But I will just go home, take off my sweater, and throw it somewhere, and now it's fun.
Yeah.
He hates it. I just leave it there for a while.
So you don't have, like, Japanese waterfalls and stuff, like,
no,
through your living room?
No, I'm really excited to make, well, we just moved into a new place, though, so.
Okay.
Trying to make terrariums.
What's that?
What's that?
Really?
Yeah.
Terrariums?
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 Yeah, like terrain.
Oh.
And
within areas. a little kind of
yeah,
you know, glass like enclosure of like a scenic, like a little, some rocks and like some grass.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Over the last number of years in dealing with this and kind of getting to know your anxiety, what has been the most extreme, the word outbreak is coming in my head, but like, that's clearly not the right fucking word, but like the most
reaction.
Yeah. The most extreme reaction, the most extreme, event that's like how intense has it gotten?
Well, so my panic attacks, so I had those, I wouldn't say that I've really had any to that extent. Within the past few months, which is nice. In like November, December, I had like a slew of like 8, and they're super intense. I remember one of the worst ones, probably because it was around my friends. It was at one of the restaurants. First of all, there's a lot of triggers there for me. I'm thinking, fuck, I got to eat something. What am I going to eat? It's like a sushi place.
Oh, God, it's so hard to order sushi.
Yeah, I don't even think it was sushi.
Really? Yeah. I find it pretty...
Yeah, it's just so many things. The menu's just way too fucking overwhelming. Just,
and it's always and only in Japanese, which makes it really difficult.
Yeah, just, you know, take it back. Anyway.
Do your friends know?
Like, yeah. I'm really open about it, and I've been, like, in a few...
We're just laughing at Brian. Yeah. Sorry. So you're
octopi?
Yeah.
His Japanese menu thing that he just did.
That's in a different language.
Yeah,
it's not how sushi Japanese places work. So
yeah, it is.
Sashimi is not English. Okay. All right, anyway.
Anywho.
God.
Yeah, they knew about it, and I was having a crappy day, so that kind of, and they knew that, but just like yesterday, I was anxious the whole day before coming out with you guys. Yeah, so I was anxious all day, and then it was, like, time to go to the restaurant, and I was like, okay. And then I went to the washroom, and the washroom was dark, and that's a huge trigger for me. I can't be alone and in a dark space.
Okay.
Do you sleep?
No.
Jesus, oh,
many people would say I do not.
For real, or?
Like, what's an average night of sleep for you?
3 hours here, 3 hours there.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah. We have a day bed, so I, like, rotate from, like, two beds every night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay.
So, but wait, you can't be alone in the dark, but also you don't like being...
I don't like the dark, really.
Dark, okay. Yeah.
So it's, but I have to sleep in a pitch black space. It's
Yeah, it's it. That's a wow. It's a hard thing. Yeah. Sleep masks.
I have one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Panda.
You don't like being in the dark, cute. But you have to sleep in a pitch dark.
Well, get to sleep, like you can't have light shining within your eyes like that. Like,
thank you.
That you can't.
Evan says, just close your eyes.
No. Well, your brain literally is going to send. Well, if you're a freak like this guy,
yeah, I can fall asleep with the light on.
Yeah, I know. But if you want actual like deep sleep, if you want deep sleep, you do need darkness. Like you're. For your brain to be like, okay, gonna go into REM, you need to have light going through.
That's
your
eyelids.
No, dude, but light travel, like light goes, your eyelids are so thin.
Pretty sure
no
I'm
one
closing
sleeps.
My eyes right
no,
now.
You, no, you're not closing your eyes. You are squint, like you're clenching your face.
My eyelids are relaxed yet closed, and it's dark.
No, but yes.
Jill,
shut the fuck up. Okay, so you. You go into a dark bathroom.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there's so many things
being
stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
Is that where it just clicks? Like,
yeah.
Is that where you went overboard?
Yeah. Like, it was loud, and then I started, like, feeling really nauseous, and then I just started to cry, like, in a washroom, and I was gone for, like, 10 minutes. My friend... came and she was like, are you okay? And I was just like sobbing. There's people walking in and out of the washroom. I was like, oh fuck, this is weird. But like, I'm in this state where I can't control that.
Yeah.
And then eventually, like I wrote a poem and I, have a picture about it because it was such a terrible traumatic experience for me. This is one of the ones that I'm able to talk about though, which is nice.
There's some of them things that you can't go there.
Yeah, I've tried to revisit them in counseling, and it's just
way too hard.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. So, run me through a panic attack, if that's okay. Like, if that makes you feel okay. Like, what viscerally? Like, what's happening? Like, what do you feel when?
Yeah. Well,
is it a slow burn, or is it?
There are definitely signs that. My mood changes before. I'm not going to speak for everybody's because everybody's is different.
Yeah, your own personal experience.
I would also like to pitch, if you don't know somebody and they say they're having a panic attack, symptoms of panic attacks are a lot like heart attacks. So they could have like chest pain. So take them to Emerge or something.
Regardless. Yeah.
Like if you don't know them, but people, my friends knew me, they knew that's kind of what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it escalated pretty quickly, but it's a lot of like downward spiral in my head, and then I feel all these symptoms, like my chest gets really tight, I start sweating profusely, really gross.
Mm. I can't stop farting, I just fart, fart, fart.
It's actually one of the only times it doesn't happen.
That's the only time it ever stops. It's the silver lining of the whole situation.
Yeah, I actually induce panic attacks sometimes.
Why is poo humor just always so easy to laugh
at?
It's
so funny.
The best.
Dude, farting is the funniest.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
When I was in high school, I was on an improv team, and my drama teacher, Erin Morris, she's probably fucking listening to this episode right now. I love her to death. She's one of the reasons I am who I am today. She played a huge role in my life, but she was always so against like toilet humor. She was like, "Don't ever use that in it, definitely don't use that while we're competing," which I get.
I know why.
Like low-hanging fruit kind of thing?
Yeah, it's just like, don't it's...
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
In the comedy world, that's what they call those
It's like
things.
A guarantee.
It's just cheap, right? Yeah. And I get that. So, but I would always think like, well, it's cheap, then don't even laugh at it. Don't laugh at it. But now... I don't know. I just love it, man.
If it's funny, it's funny.
I love it. Yeah, it's the best. So, Aaron, suck it. just kidding. I love you. I still love you.
One of my favorite things to do is go along the grocery list and just make words into, like, poo.
Shampoo.
No, that that's already there.
It.
Yeah.
That's not making
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
else.
You didn't make it. That's
what it is already.
It's conditioner poo. Right? Yeah. Is that
just like or like grapes, take out the ES, just put grapu.
There you go.
I like this game. That was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Shampoopy butt. Is that better? That's better though, right?
Well, I cup.
Shampoopy
butt. Where were we?
I'm pretty sure we were in the middle of a panic, describing panic attack symptoms, and then we started.
This is not how it goes.
And then we started talking about farting and excessive gas.
Guys, this is the best. I love this. Okay, so you can't go back to some of them. And you were explaining what is happening. So, right, heart attack or pain in the chest, take them to emerge. But your personal experience.
Yeah. Have you experienced loss of a loved one?
Yeah, I mean, I lost my grandfather. That's, you know, and I knew it was like, there was a distance there, right? Between
right.
me and my grandfather. Like I didn't grow up with him.
Right. Right.
But yeah. I felt that loss for sure.
Yeah. So the reason I ask is because I haven't lost anyone,
hello?
Who's close that? To me.
Oh, that was you. Sorry.
Whatever, Chuck. But when I'm like nearing the kind of end of my panic attack, I have this awful session where I just cry and I can't even hold myself up. Mm. I was with a friend, my friend Maeve, or like Evan will hold me up and I'll just be like crying excessively. Like I've just lost like my best person.
It's like a complete emotional takeover of your,
it's fucking awful. Is it
like a loud, ugly cry or is it one of those like,
I was like thinking in the washroom, like for a brief second, I was like, ugh.
Just a good old Claire Danes, like,
yeah.
Falls to the wall, just...
Yeah, I can't control it. I don't know why that happens.
Yeah.
So from this particular, I guess, episode, we, like, made a plan because we were like, okay, we need to get you out of here. I was like, okay. I was like, in order to do this, we need to get my jacket. So we kind of like laid out steps to like to fix this situation. But we were also like right on Yonge Street. So we had to figure out like how the fuck do we get off Yonge Street? And so we like got my jacket and we got to the door, and then my friend hit the door and it made this awful piercing noise, and I just like went right back into that cry.
You just
again.
Really you just needed an invisibility cloak. Like if you
That's
had
right.
one, you would have been right. totally fine. I know I've got my friend Harry usually has one on hand.
Asio invisibility cloak.
Exactly. Yeah. But you didn't have that at the time, right?
Jesus Christ, guys.
You were still you're a muggle, so right?
I'm half muggle.
If anyone can see me, I'm just shaking my head.
He's actually nodding up and down. He's in agreement.
What you're actually doing is subtly rubbing your lips against the tip of the mic, which is... you're on Yonge Street, and it's obviously like boisterous and crazy.
This is like the most immature combination of like serious. We're in the middle of a panic attack, and we're like, making fart and poop jokes.
Yeah, one of the hardest like mental illnesses to deal with, and we're just like da da poo poo wee wee. We just spoke to a couple hours ago to a guy who is dealing with PTSD, and we were talking about triggers.
Yeah.
And we had a really interesting conversation surrounding triggers in particular, but I find it so interesting because I have no way of grasping what that is, right? You said that your friend ran into the door and there was like a ting or whatever, and that sent you back into this spiral. And I have such a hard time wrapping my head around that. It's like, wow, that's so, I find that so interesting, so fascinating that just something as simple as that, right? Something as simple as, like we were saying with Jim, like your feet, like it can just send someone over the edge.
Yeah.
And that's super trippy. Are there any very specific triggers that you know of that you just try to avoid?
Butterflies.
Really?
Whoa.
Actually?
I have like a huge fear of butterflies. I would rather be, if this room had one butterfly, I would not be here. If it had like four bees, I'd be okay.
Do you know the name of that phobia?
I don't think they've named it.
Really? No, they had to. That has to be a name. I'm looking it up right now.
I could understand moths, but butterflies?
How could you understand moths like, versus butterflies?
Oh, they're so different?
Moths are...
They're not that creepier. Different.
They moths, flap. They don't know where they're going.
Moths' wings are low to the ground. Butterflies' wings go straight up. Like, that's the only difference.
Butterflies
guys.
are like a very,
colorful
very
and beautiful.
Colorful, vibrant, fashionable
I've
dress.
Got a, I've got
and a moth is like a dirty,
I've got a
old,
tattoo
used,
on my low back of a butterfly.
Like sweaty t-shirt.
I was gonna say.
Are there any other like bugs that's, that you're allergic that you're allergic
I'm
to
allergic
that
to
you're
butterflies.
Mentally allergic to? Are there any other bugs that
like
send
that.
You into that? You like that? Yeah.
No. Thanks. So that doesn't really come up often, especially like that was December. Winter doesn't really have butterflies.
Yeah.
I just wanted to point that out there. There are people
that's
I know.
Really
I met one other person who hates butterflies like I do.
Are you like afraid of them?
Super afraid.
What about a dragonfly? What about your dragonfly?
Oh, no, they're not so bad.
Interesting, because I'm reading this Wikipedia thing. It's like, this phobia is closely linked to entomophobia, which is the fear of insects, or motophobia, the fear of moths. That's a specific one.
Great.
It is believed that actress Nicole Kidman suffers from lepidopterophobia.
Why does it have that?
I don't know. People with this fear, with the fear of butterflies, are extremely afraid of most winged insects, except for you.
Yeah.
So bees don't, like, it's like whatever. But just,
I mean, like, it sucks. They might bite me or sting me or whatever.
So what happened after you had, like, you heard the sound and just, like, send you back into that panic?
Yeah.
How do you get out of there?
Well, I took, like, a couple minutes of, like, wailing. And then we kind of just said, okay, we're going to go, like, right now. And we had to, like, walk down these dark stairs, go on Yonge Street. And then once we got on the side street, like, I was fine.
You were just like, boom, oh, hey, guys.
I mean,
I'm
like,
back.
I put in my earplugs. I had my own, like, bubble. My friends know. So they, like, make themselves big to, like, give me, like, space, which is really nice. Yeah, and then I was fine.
That's, wow, it's so interesting.
Did you guys go back in after, or, like, you were done there?
No, I was done.
Okay.
And I won't go eat there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Will you never go back into that restaurant again?
Probably not.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think if you did, that could be potentially a trigger just by walking in there?
Yeah. Well, it depends on my mood for sure. Like going in, like if I went in right now, it might be fine, but I also don't want to like risk
why
it.
Why fuck with it? Yeah. Who gives? Yeah. Whatever. You don't need to go back there anyway. The food probably wasn't that great.
I couldn't even read the menu. It was in Japanese.
So the more difficult, panic attacks that you have trouble even speaking to your counselor about.
Yeah.
Are they like in the same essence, like very similar to that?
They're like more when, well, there's a few when I'm like by myself that I've had.
Oh, that sounds scary.
And it's just my reality is totally distorted.
Yeah.
And so I can't even piece together why. And it's really scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like with the, I was telling the guys that last night something was eating something outside yesterday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I didn't know what it was. And for me, not knowing what a sound is, like if there was a tick in this room that I could hear, I would need to know where it is.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm like, there's something scraping on the wall.
Yeah.
It's like trying to get in.
You mentioned earlier about how you wrote a poem surrounding that incident. And I know that you do a lot of work with using art as a way to manage your mental health. Or treat your mental health. Can you speak a little bit about that?
I can. I'd love to.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
It was so Evan writes poetry. Like he's doing English and he loves it. So I started, I guess, a year and a half ago, like when we met, like writing some poetry with him. And then I carry a notebook everywhere I go. I carry like a toolbox of like mental health things. And so I'll just like write things down. Like if I'm in a shitty situation, I'll be writing like, okay, like how can we make this less, what's the correct word? Like I try and make it so that somebody else would understand. Cause that's what I'm trying to do is I don't want anybody to have to experience it, but I want people to get it.
Yeah. Less. You want people to mentally digest what you are going through.
Less
yeah.
personal and like more relatable.
That's the stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's the ticket.
That's the one. Good job, Octopi. Yeah. And then I paint with watercolors and I find watercolors really cool because it doesn't have to be like in the lines and you can like, you can like blow on it and it'll like go in different directions or you can like hold the paper up.
Is this watercolor or it's just vibrant color?
I mean, it's
looking
a tattoo.
At my tattoo. I know.
It's hard.
Dude, watercolors.
I feel like, what is watercolor? Like, I actually don't know what that.
Watercolor is a technique for painting.
It's not like a. It's not a sort of.
It could be like, an effect.
Like,
I suppose.
Like a palette. It's not a. It's not like a sort of color palette.
No.
No.
You know, like neon is like no. Oh, these
it's
are
like
neon
acrylic
colors, or these are
watercolor versus oil.
Oh, okay, yeah. So it's legitimately a.
It's like it's the
a
material. Thing.
Got it.
Like the paint.
Yeah, no, I was a legit question. I don't know what watercolor means.
Taylor, you look offended.
Taylor was like, it's watercolor, you fucking idiot. You don't know that? I'm like, yo, dude, just relax. God.
No, it is it's a pretty common thing to know, I guess. So.
I don't paint, so I don't know. I
mean, like, that was a dumb question.
It is weird that you don't know. I'm just saying.
It's not that weird. Dude.
Okay, okay.
You don't
okay,
like
okay,
olives,
okay.
And that to me is weird.
Okay. I don't like
Fair
olives.
Enough.
All right.
Brian
all
doesn't
right,
like
boys.
Tomatoes.
I don't either.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Five.
You guys are weird. You guys are weird, too.
What don't you like?
Carrots. I don't like carrots. Fuck carrots.
Fucking weirdo.
I like carrots, so.
Me too.
So, watercoloring and poetry. What else?
I mean,
what else do you want?
Well, yeah.
Just make something up.
Play the trombone?
What do you paint? Like anything?
Is it mostly like abstract or? Kind of stuff, or? Oh, is that? I'm sorry. Is that not a? Is abstract not a
the
fucking
type
term?
Of paint?
God, is that? Yeah, is that what color is abstract?
Is abstract the type of canvas that you use?
What's
for
consistency?
Fuck's sake.
All right,
I don't
let's
know.
Get serious.
Okay, 3, 2, 1. Serious. Okay. That was pretty good. That was good until we just.
So you were saying, what do you do with this watercolor technique? Like,
yeah,
what's the process of that?
Well, again, in a different way than the poetry, it's to try and kind of bring out an experience that I've had. like one I've recently kind of posted is of myself and Evan like underneath an umbrella and like there's water coming down. And so for me, it's like Evan's holding the umbrella and he's like embracing me and like taking me out of like my like depressive states, which is cool for me.
Mm-hmm. What is it that makes like it's art? Art is, you know, it's there's you know, when you're drawing or doodling or even writing or journaling or whatever, there's some sort of like meditative process to that.
Totally.
What is it about the actual doing of the art? Like, what is it that's therapeutic to you? Like, why do you do it?
Well,
why do you think you're drawn to that?
Same reason I'm kind of here talking with you guys is that I find it really helpful to explain what I go through so that other people can resonate with it or people can understand it.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that even in explaining it to other people, you're explaining it to yourself as well?
Yeah, that, exactly.
Sometimes, yeah, because questions are always different.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess like how is it manifesting itself and helping you through helping others?
I'm in nursing. It's what I like to do.
Yeah, right. Sure.
But like, I know that I'm helping others because like I did, 100 days of happy challenge and I got so many Facebook messages from people being like, holy shit, I had no idea you're going through this. This is what I'm going through. Or like, how do I help my brother who's going through this? I'm like, fuck, this is wicked. Like, and Jeff, when I originally spoke with him, he's like, so, you know, we have a really good treatment right here. It's just talking. It's free. It's just great. So that's, yeah.
Just saying like, yo, this is so helpful to know, to know that there's other people going out there going through similar things and to know that there's, you know, even like a support system that I don't even lean on really, but just knowing that it exists.
It's cool helpful. That there are so many ways to express, you know, to express what you're going through or, you know, whether it be sitting like we are here, sitting down with a couple microphones and recording a conversation or sitting down in front of, excuse me if I butcher this, but a canvas and using the technique of watercolor with some specific colors or even like writing poetry or playing music or, yeah, it's cool that we have this at our disposal, but it's interesting that not a lot of people gravitate towards it, I find. Like, I find it takes a while for people to find their niche or find, like, what works for them. Thing's always been laughter, right? Like, my thing's always been joking about, just joking, and not for, like, some sort of... not using laughter as some sort of veil or like hiding behind it. It's like, no, it's just
therapy.
It's the therapeutic like value.
It's the same way I feel, when I go surfing, for example, I just lose track of time and I'm totally 100% involved in what I'm doing. And that's all I need right in that moment to feel totally connected with myself. It's like the process of meditation, right? Mm-hmm. Some people call it meditation. Some people call it just enjoyment in what they're doing. But it's that focus that just allows you to really connect with who you are, right?
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I guess what I was trying to say was for anybody who's out there who's listening and they're like, I don't have that. Like, I don't have watercolors. Or fuck, Jesus Christ! I don't have like painting, or I don't have poetry, or I don't have.
Abstract,
or a podcast, or I don't have a lamp. I don't journal, or I don't write poetry. The thing is, you have to search for it. Like, you have to find that. I'm sure that you didn't, like you said, before you met Muhammad, you didn't know poetry was like something that you could utilize or use. You had to search for it, or it found you, but. There's a lot of value in actually looking for the things that you can draw therapy from. Guys, I'm sorry. I was trying to continue it. I was continuing my message, but you know what I mean?
You did a really good job of holding that together. Because that was a really good thought.
It is
that was beautiful.
Yeah, it is a good thought. And I do think it is extremely important. So if there is anybody out there listening to this and you don't have that thing, especially when... It doesn't fucking matter. Mental illness, physical illness, if you're not sick, like
self-care,
like find the thing that makes you that just brings you back to earth and like and puts your world into perspective.
Oh, dude, it's the most valuable thing that you can.
Yeah,
it is the most valuable thing that you can do for yourself ever for your entire in your entire life.
Yeah,
is finding that.
What do you feel like your anxiety and your panic attacks has taken away from you?
Some freedom. As a super easy thing to say, like I used to really love, I'm big into like hockey. And so I would love going to like the NHL games or like a Raps game or something like that. And that is terrifying. Or like having to plan to go on the subway or like walking downtown. I never know what my mood will be like. So having to think that far ahead to plan, like, okay, I need to have X, Y, and Z on me to make sure that I'm okay. And then I need to have these numbers. Like I have a safe plan or safety plan on my phone.
Contingency plan.
Yeah.
What do you feel your anxiety and your panic attacks has given you?
Kind of like a different perspective and an ability to share that with other people. Like I've made, it's probably a strong word, but Evan is much more aware and my family are much more aware of like noises and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like, you know, I'm like the only person that I know that has that sensitivity to sound, but it makes you think of other people.
With regards to anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of people speak super openly about it, so right. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. I know people who experience autism have high sensory stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
So.
This is a super funny and
it got super fucking silly there for a bit, but yeah it was fun. This is one thing that I've always wondered, and I have talked about this on the podcast before, especially when it comes to mental illness. You know, when you talk to someone who's dealing with whatever cancer or cystic fibrosis or diabetes, to sit and talk about it, it can't directly affect the physical, right? Like it's not going to affect the cancer, it's not going to affect the CF, but to sit and chat about mental illness, it can have a direct effect mm-hmm. on the illness. And whether that be positive or negative. And I wonder, you know, sitting here with the three of us, you don't know us. Like, we don't know you.
That's aside what you
think. From, yeah. Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, if you listen to the podcast, you probably know a lot more about us than a lot of people. But does it have an effect, or is there a part of you that was anxious about coming in here to talk today?
Yeah. But it was an appropriate, like, it was what I would assume, like, for public speaking or something like that. Like,
right.
Like I'm okay with that, but there is some like nerves, but yeah. I acknowledge those as like appropriate for the situation.
Do you feel nothing
above and beyond what any person walking around would feel for coming in and talking to people about something on a microphone or in public speaking?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that there's potential for it to have a, like maybe a negative effect on you?
What?
Maybe in retrospect, like after the conversation, like 2 or 3 days out from now?
Well, my brain, like I like to think and analyze situations a lot. So I'll be like, oh, what if I said something stupid? Or
don't worry about that.
I wouldn't be worried about you saying something stupid.
I say stupid stuff all the time and I don't lose sleep over it. So.
Anybody notice over the last few minutes that it sounds like Brian's slurring a little bit?
Mm. Yeah, what's in that water bottle, bro?
Am I slurring?
A little bit.
No, maybe it's just dry. My ears. You sound like... Yes.
I'm just getting lazy. I'm tired.
Got rosy cheeks.
I don't know if...
when we finished talking about the loud noises being like kind of eccentric to you...
Almost, actually...
You went, that's awesome. and I looked over you and I was like, is Brian drunk?
Just give it a second. We'll just give it a second. We're going to play that right now.
That's amazing.
Thank you. That was it.
Like I said, I'm not going to lose any sleep over this. So.
Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you'd like to talk about?
Put me on the spot here.
Or is there anything that you feel like you would like to say to someone who might be in a similar situation to yourself?
I guess more broadly... If I can just totally take that question away, is just like the simplicity of talking about it and like having an open mind is simple. And I think as somebody who experiences mental illness, I don't want you to get it. I want you to appreciate me. One of the best things that Evan said is like, you are sick. Like, I'm not going to leave you because you're sick. Like that's, I see that you're, you know, experiencing a mood right now. So he accepts it. He doesn't try and change it and channel it in a different way.
What a great guy.
He seems like a really super great guy. Nice. Yeah. He was really nice last night.
Yeah. The Winnipeg Jets suck.
is that going to get underneath his skin?
Oh, nice.
You're just digging him. Love it.
Go Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
No.
Whatever.
suck it, Brian.
Yeah. Go Leafs, go.
Thank you,
Jess, for coming in. This was really fun. Thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We're going to come back with another episode next week, as we always do. But before then, take a second of your day. Go over to iTunes, rate us, review us.
Subscribe
to our shit.
I feel like people don't do it because Taylor says it that way.
Yeah. Maybe we should change it up. But it actually does make a huge, huge, it makes a big difference for us. It plays a role in spreading our message and getting the show out there. Those star ratings, those reviews, they literally do make a difference. So
they're the big one.
They're the big one. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that shit. Check it out. We got lots of fun stuff up there. And that's it for today.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy. And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.